Welcome to another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk, and you can find out more at allbook-books.com and the Substack page, which has recent poems and essays you can subscribe for free. So this edition, The Pen and the Sword, inspired by reading Matthias Desmet's Substack, his recent post, Propaganda, Sincere Speech, and the Intuition of the Samurai. He writes, "How did the samurai develop this intuition? The intuition of the warrior is related to the act of speech. Unlike Plato, samurai culture believed that the pen and the sword should be wielded by the same hand. Samurai practiced the art of speech, and one of the elementary principles of this art was sincerity." So I thought, that's cool, the sword and the pen and the sword, because there's that phrase, the pen is mightier than the sword. And of recent, I've been pondering that phrase for a while, actually, thinking about, well, if you interpret the sword as kind of in a battle sense, that the pen is mightier. And I'm thinking, well, sometimes, because sometimes the pen doesn't do much, if anything, as the metaphor of the sword, as the powers that do too much. My association with that is that, the brutality tends to win a fair amount, but that, of course, does not mean to give up on the pen. So wanted to talk about that a bit, and also as a call to action to writers to consider not only their writings, but also actually what they do outside of their writings in an activist sense, and also that the writings can be like a sword and really cut to the essence of things and challenge things and what's going on. So kind of a challenge to writers there to be more sword-like. And then I looked up the phrase and was interested to learn that this is an article by Dr. Oliver Tyrrell from Loughborough University. The pen is mightier than the sword. The phrase has the ring of a proverb about it, and most proverbs don't have an author. But actually, there's a clear source for that phrase. It came about in 1839, invented by a 19th century writer named Sir Edward Bulwer Lytton in a play about Cardinal Richelieu. That's where that phrase comes from, and here's the quote from Bulwer Lytton. "Beneath the rule of men entirely great, the pen is mightier than the sword." Then he goes further on to explain that the wording appears to have been original, but the sentiment was not. The Oxford Concise Dictionary of Proverbs lists several precursors for this famous statement, which, although worded differently, convey the same idea. Cicero in De Officiis 44 BC declares some kind of Latin, which translates as "arms give way to persuasion." And George Whetstone, in part 3 of the Heptameron of Civil Discourses, writes, "The dash of a pen is more grievous than the counter use of a lance. And this is from 1582. 3 years before Richelieu, the subject of Lytton's play was even born, and over 2 centuries before Lytton's own birth, in his 1712 poem, The Eagle and the Robin, William King wrote that now and then a sword less hurt does than a pen. Other precursors of Lytton's phrase are provided by State Master, who mentions the Epistle to the Hebrews 4:12, written A.D. 63-64, "For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit and the joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart." And on June 19, 1792, Thomas Jefferson wrote to Thomas Paine that Paine could go on then in doing with your pen what in other times was done with the sword. Other examples include from Hamlet and Richard Burton's Anatomy of Melancholy. So although the phrase, the pen is mightier than the sword, appears to have been original to Lytton, One of the reasons it has the ring of a timeless proverb about it is that it has been around, albeit expressed in slightly different ways, for a couple of thousand years. So interesting to learn that that whole concept of, you know, what does writing, can writing actually do anything, has a history to it. And I would add that the sword is actually a double-edged sword because, as I know of it from the Kabbalah in a book by William Gray, The Ladder of Lights, he mentions the Archangel Kamael, who has an association with fire as a cleanser and a burning away of unnecessary baggage. Also, the sword can be both a healer in cutting away unnecessary stuff, or the example of a surgeon's use of the sword for healing, that is, again, a positive compared to the negative of the sword in a battle sense of attacking somebody. So the sword itself is a double-edged sword. And basically, to wrap up, the Desmet's post reminded me of a Zen story, which I shared in the Substack comments and was amazed to find that a couple of people, it like resolved some issue they're dealing with, and it got about 15 likes for just commenting. So I'll read one version of the Zen story, which I don't remember if it's in Paul Reps's Zen Flesh, Zen Bones, but here it is. A tough, brawny samurai once approached a Zen master who was deep in meditation. Impatient and discourteous, the samurai demanded in his husky voice, so accustomed to forceful yelling, "Tell me the nature of heaven and hell." The Zen master opened his eyes, looked the samurai in his face, and replied with a certain scorn, "Why should I answer to a shabby, disgusting, despondent slob like you, a worm like you? Do you think I should tell you anything? I can't stand you. Get out of my sight. I have no time for silly questions." The samurai could not bear these insults. Consumed by rage, he drew his sword and raised it as if to sever the master's head at once. Looking straight in the samurai's eyes, the Zen master tenderly declared, "That is hell." The samurai froze. He immediately understood that anger had him in its grip. His mind had just created his own hell, one filled with resentment, hatred, self-defense, and fury. He realized that he was so deep in his torment that he was ready to kill somebody. The samurai's eyes filled with tears. Setting his sword aside, he put his palms together and bowed in gratitude for this insight. The Zen master gently acknowledged with a delicate smile, "And that is heaven." So the Zen story is a perfect example of the sword, the word and the sword, the image of the association of the sword, both two in one. And while I was working on this, I realized that the word sword has the word word in it. So the pen and the sword have some kind of affinity there. And as a footnote, I was reminded of P.G. Wodehouse, who I consider the master of situation comedy, especially his series of Jeeves and Worcester stories and novels. And there's a quote I had learned of Wodehouse a long time ago that I think is also very helpful for writers. Maybe not necessarily to be taken absolute, but it does make an astute point. Here's the quote. Wodehouse understood perfectly what he was about. "I believe," he remarked in an oft-quoted letter to his friend William Townsend, "there are only two ways of writing a novel. One is mine, making the thing a sort of musical comedy without music and ignoring real life altogether. The other is going down deep into life and not caring a damn." So my opinion is that he didn't ignore real life altogether, in the sense that he parodied real life, the real life upper crust in England and elsewhere. But I think the bigger gist of his point was that we make choices, writers make choices, and sometimes the choice is to be humorous and to have a total send-up and satire, and the other way is to really just go at it and go for the guts and the core of things. So whether you blend or do any of those, as a writer, I think it's good to make the choices and to realize that the pen can be as mighty as the sword, but yet the sword as well, in a metaphorical sense, has its function too. So thanks for listening, and be well.